accession number 18463, Reel 3.
Barrett's Reel 3.
Well, as I was saying, we weren't actually in Hong Kong Island. We were up in the territories, up near the, I think it's the Sham Shui River. I might have mispronounced that, but in the Jockey Club, and we did all sorts of training prior to my arrival. They'd been digging defences and wiring them and putting galvanised steel and what have you along these trenches, but it had all been completed by the time I arrived, and we had a landing strip down the just below the camp, and there used to be Oster aircraft used to come in there, and very occasionally they'd give people a lift out over the river and what have you as they went out on things, and then we'd do patrols, and also there was a place called Sandy Ridge, which overlooked Lochmachelle Police Station and Sandy Ridge OP, and then you spent about a week up there. And a very, very amusing thing happened. But that time, I was the last chap at that time. But there was a very amusing thing happened there. I was on the duty thing up there. And no one told me what to do. They said, make a note of everything you see. So I did. Every time a train puffed up a cloud of smoke the sparks went up and people coming over the crossing there at Lochmachelle. I wrote the whole darn lockdown, you know. I had it all. And, of course, afterwards I wasn't supposed to be doing that at all, you know. And the rather funny thing, the bridge over the river, Lochmachelle, where the people went by with their passes and what have you, and came over in lorries and vehicles and went home between us and Red China. But 150 yards down, there was a great wire fence, incidentally, all along our side of the river. But 150 yards down from the police post, where they could quite easily see it, and we could see it as well, quite clearly, was the smugglers' route. And every day, they brought the rice in, and they came down here, crossed the river, waded across the river, through the wire fence, which was cut open for them, and off on their way, and then went back at night. And, of course, I got all this religiously down. I said, oh, don't bother about that. That happens every day. That's the rice coming in. If it didn't come in, we'd all starve. I couldn't believe it. I mean, I was a novice in these things, you'll appreciate, you know. And they played a wonderful trick on me. A voice came over and said, there's another police post, I can't remember the name of it now, up to to the west of us. And this Scots voice said, hi, this is Inspector so-and-so, and we've got some trouble, and there's a couple of guys coming down, all this sort of business. You know, I'm saying, oh, yes. He said, you better get out on the top and have a look around, see if you can see anything, come and report to me. And this went on for half an hour. I'm sucking all this in, and of course it's one of the chaps down the bottom, isn't it, who's playing tricks on me, and I'm dashing down, I'm on the phone saying, hello, there's a couple of... And oh, are there? Oh, all right. Oh, well, get that down, you know. wonderful. But that's actually, I've gone on a little bit because if I've come back again now to, we landed in Hong Kong, went through a normal training, and very soon after this, I went off on an NCO's course, junior NCO's course. And what they did, it was a very good idea, actually, the Middlesex. They didn't have the course in the camp. You were sent down to 3RTR, who were down at San Wai, and they put some tents up there on a little mound, and the training NCOs and officer came down each day and trained us, and when they'd gone, you were on your own. It was, you know, they trusted you to do as you like. But of course, unfortunately, San Wai camp at that time was suffering from sandfly fever. These tankies were falling about all over the place, you know. Mainly at meal times, it seemed to us, because we looked down on the dining halls, there were three ambulances parked outside the dining halls, and they would regularly be bringing them out on stretchers and carting them off down to, I presume, down to Kowloon Hospital. And they were dropping like flies, but we didn't have any trouble at all. Sandflies apparently are so small they get through your mosquito net, you know. So they, but we didn't have any trouble. Although whilst we were there, SBI, I think they were, whatever they were, the investigation people who check on units and things like that, came and took one of these Churchill tanks, drove it through the wire, and, well, not stole it, but just took it outside the wire and said, well, there's one of your tanks, what are you going to do about it? The 3RTR were perhaps a little bit lax because they were having so many people go down. But the food there was dreadful, absolutely dreadful. They lived on fish. There was a lot of fish in the, you know, in all the meals at that time in Hong Kong, because there were so many troops in there. 30,000 troops had suddenly come in, and a lot of the food being grown there wasn't suitable because it was used with human excrement, you know, and they had to be careful. But you could have at Sam Wai, you could have porridge and kippers in the morning, pickled herrings in brine and salad at midday, and then in the evening you'd either get kippers or haddock, and that you always had two meals of fish, and occasionally you might get a fried egg or something like that, you know, but always two meals were always fish. Now, I can't stand fish. I don't like fish. I don't mind, for me, a piece of cod with batter around it, I can just about cope with that, but I don't like herrings or kippers or, you know, if I had a kipper, it'd be one a year sort of thing, and then I wouldn't want any more, ever. But that was a terrible, terribly run camp. And as I say, they were all dropping. Maybe it was because so many of them were going sick. You know, as I say, it must have been bad for three ambulances to be parked outside the dining hall, and they were regularly carting them away. But we had a good NCOs course there. We used to go out when the rains came. We had to dig trenches around the tents, you know, little gullies, that is, to take the water away, and we sort of directed it down into the RTR area. And one of the lads, Fred Beasley, regular, he thought, this is a fantastic idea, this, because we'd already got a bucket for washing. See, we're on our own now, so we don't go all these parades for washing and all that sort of thing. So we got a bucket, and it got a bit murky, you know, for the last person up, but that was your fault. If you got up early, you could have a reasonably clean wash in this bucket. And what he did, he dug a little trench from the gully where the water was coming under his bed, and he used to lay in bed. Quite a character, Fred Beasley, as he was in career as well. But we finished it in the end. They took us back up the we used to go out on the playground there. Tom CSM Millen used to come down and do the, he was the drill sergeant, you know, sergeant major, and he came, majestic figure, and he'd come down and try and instill in us, you know, drill, or the taking of drill, you know, not the drilling itself, but taking squads and drill and things like that. He was really a majestic figure. It rained one day, well, as it does in out there regularly, and he said, get off the square, and he majestically walked back across all this muddy square, getting wetter and wetter and wetter. And then when we had our final parades, the weapon training was done down at Sam Wai. A couple of sergeants came down and took us, and the drill was up on the landing field at B Stables. And the RSM had got a company, I bet they were well pleased, this company, out there. And we all stood on the side of the square, and he called us forward in one at a time. And we had to drill this company. We'd never drilled a company before. We'd only drilled our own little squad of about six or seven men. Now we've got a company with the RSM. But it must have gone off well, because we all passed out. And we were not promoted straight. Well, I certainly wasn't. I don't know about the others. I can't really, because we came from all over the battalion, but I wasn't promoted straight away, and I must have been, it must have been about the Elbuhira Day is a great celebration in the Middlesex, and we had a wonderful day, 16th of May, and they put tables all out in one of the roadways. All I remember, it was between the Naffy and over in the back of the camp and huts on the side there. It wasn't over near the stables where we lived, and blankets over them, and we had a wonderful meal. The sergeants and the warrant officers and the junior officers served it. I think the company commanders came down as well, and we had a really jolly good meal. And then most people went off to the Naffy, and it was one of these. I got very tired and went off to bed. About 9 o'clock, I was finished. I had to go and sleep. Woke up in the morning. I thought, whatever's happened? Breakages everywhere, broken windows. Apparently what had happened was that they'd all got a bit tipsy, you know, had too much to drink. Because we didn't have any drink, you see. It was all new mainly to everybody. And they'd smashed the camp up. Unfortunately, there's an army catering corporal had hit the RSM and fractured his skull. Poor old CO put his head round the door. I mean, this is all hearsay now, anecdotal, because I didn't see any of this. This is just stories. He put his head round the door of the corporal's mess, and a mug was thrown at him. And, of course, the provost sergeant then took over and dealt a few blows with his stick. And he had them all in the down in the guard room. But there was a fair old mess to clear up. And it was said, and again, I cannot be sure of this, they said that the inline picket from the Argyles came down with their entrenching tool handles, you know, ready to give us a whack in, but were not called in. But the provost sergeant sorted it all out. And then more or less, it must have been more or less directly after that, we went off down to Hong Kong for what they call Palace Guards, which was guards on Government House. And there was some other building there that they guarded, but I don't know what it was, because I was only ever on Government House. And we were up there on guard. It was quite good, really. Government House was quite interesting, really, because that's where the colours of the battalion had been buried during the Japanese occupation, you know. And the ants got at the cloth and ate it all, and all they found was the top bit, you know, sort of thing. So it was quite a Middlesex sort of place, if you know what I mean. And we did our guard duties. Used to form the guard. The guard used to mount down in Victoria Barracks. And they then pick out what they called a stick man, smartest man. And the guard I was always on, there was a chap who was a natural stick man. He was immaculate. He should have been stick man for life, if you know what I mean. He had the right physique. He was slim, and his sleeves were always properly folded. He was absolutely immaculate. And for the first two guards we did, he naturally got it. And I cannot deny it. He was the best man there, you know, he really was. Well, the stick man, he didn't have any guards to do. He was let off guards. He just had two jobs to do. One was to keep an eye out for the governor coming out in his Rolls Royce. And, you know, because you had to present arms and what have you if you're on guard out there. And the other was to deal with the meals, you know, get the tea and the grub and just do a little bit of clearing up. So he had a lovely, lovely old day. And the third day, the second guard I did, I was on guard outside. And, of course, out comes the purring Rolls Royce. I didn't hear it. My back's to it, you see. And you were supposed to, there was a little slit behind you, a little, like a little arrow slit, as it were, in the guardroom wall. And somebody was supposed to say through that, "Governor," and you immediately print it on. Nobody did. I just do a hurried present arms, and he, you know, sort of does a salute to you, sort of thing. And a voice behind me said, "You're in trouble for that, laddie." It was the guard sergeant talking through this slit. But of course, I should have had the warning. And it was, you can't tell people you haven't had the warning, because it's, you know, you don't do these sort of things. You just take your punishment, sort of thing. But when I came off, I got a terrible telling off. And the next day, I got stick man. I couldn't believe it. This is fantastic. And about 10 o'clock, word came up, "You've been promoted." It's just come out on party orders up at B's. "You've been promoted. You've got to go back straight away." So I missed my stick man. And the other chap who would be honest, he deserved it, be quite honest. He was just a naturally, you know, good-looking chap. And a vehicle came up for me, and I was taken back to Victoria Barracks. down to collect my kit, up to, you know, Fan Ling, and to Bees. And then I saw the company commander, and he said, "Well, you're on CO's orders tomorrow, and you'll have a provisional." I think it was 6 months provisional, acting provisional, you know. And in that time, you could be stripped any way you liked, you know, loose strung. And once you'd had your 6 months, providing you weren't off the camp for over 3 weeks, sick for 3 weeks or something, then you could keep your rank. If you, like I was sick for, I just managed to get a day before, but you lost it if you were over 3 weeks. And the next day it was CO's orders. I'd never seen so many people on CO's orders. It seemed like 20 or 30 people on CO's orders there, and I'm the last one. I'm at the end of the line. RSM puts me on the end of the line, or rather battalion orderly sergeant put me on the end of the line. And of course, I'd actually been given the day when the CO was dishing out his punishment for the 16th of May affair, which included DB, you know, going down to the detention barracks at Hong Kong. And these were all being marched in double time, you know, all with escort and witnesses and things like that. And it must have taken an hour and a half, I should think, before it ever came to me. Of course, I'm marching like... I'm standing in front of the CO, who you know, Andrew Mann, Colonel Andrew Mann. He was not the benign chap that he is today, I might add. And I forget exactly what he said, but he virtually only was worked up over sentencing all these people, you know. And he said, "I'm making you up to Lance Corporal today, and I can break you down tomorrow, and don't you forget it, out." And off I went. And all the joy of going down to the tailor's and having me little white stripe put on. And we used to wear a wristband about as big as a wristwatch with a little stripe on, you know, because most of the, half the time we were without shirts, you know. And I was the joy of being a Lance Corporal at last. And the following day, I was put on guard commander of the, at night we had, you had a main guard mounted in the morning and with the inline picket and all that sort of business, and the fire picket and all that rubbish. And then in the evening, there was a prowler guard picket who were in mounted up on the square, and a number of other duties. I can't remember what they all were now. And their task was to be inspected and what have you, you know, armed with five rounds. They had five rounds, charge magazine. And your job was to prowl around the camp at night in plimsolls so that you wouldn't wake people up. And any intruders, you know, presumably you shot them, I don't know. I mean, you stopped any Chinese getting in the camp at night. It was quite a, for young people who were not used to these sort of things, it was quite an adventure. So anyway, we mounted the guard, and I was going on well there, you know, doing rather well. The RSM would have been proud of me, I'm sure. Marching the guard down to the guard room, which was down a long slope, about 200 yards. And on the right-hand side was a monsoon ditch. It was concrete monsoon ditch with fairly steep slope inside. About, I guess it was about 3 foot across the bottom, 4 foot six high, concrete. I fell in the monsoon ditch. The guards going off, down, marching smartly off down the road, and their commander is clambering out of the monsoon ditch, grey's knees, all be lovely khaki, all very lovely jungle green, all tattered and battered, you know, my rifle's fallen off. I get out, and I had to run after them, and I just got to them in time at the guard room, and the guard commander was a rather unpleasant character, actually, was standing out there watching them come down. I run up, gave them halt on the wrong foot. And, of course, they went through the motions properly. And instead of saying to me, "What's wrong?" he said to the guard, what did that corporal do wrong? Of course, they all said, you know, and did his best to embarrass me. I wasn't very happy with him. But It wasn't my fault. Well, it was my fault, really, because I should have taken more care and not fallen in the monsoon ditch. My knees were all grazed, my boots were destroyed, my rifle was dirty, and I got a terrible telling off for that. It was rather interesting, though, because there was the sanitary corporal, was Corporal Field, and he had been captured in Hong Kong, you know, in 1941. And he came down and sat with us just because we had tea and stuff like that. So he came down for a cup of tea and things like that. And Jimmy Fields was quite a character. And he was telling us how he was captured in by the Japanese. He said he was I knew the road. I can't remember the road now. I know where it is. I could walk to it now. But he said they were coming down the road, walking down the road. And the Japs were up on this little ridge, fired on them, and they realised they couldn't do anything, so they put their hands up. And these Japs came down and, you know, didn't bayonet them, but prodded them fairly severely with their bayonets and took them on. And he was on the Lisbon Maru, Jimmy Fields. But he was another quite remarkable chap who had adventures in Korea as well. Quite a number of characters. I think there were about 10. One had come back, Frank Warden had come back by that time. But there were about 10, I think, who had been ex-prisoners, including the drum major, who had been, they'd all been on the Lisbon Maru. But it was quite a interesting time, really. But that was my first effort at guard.
So we're obviously in the summer of 1950 now, aren't we?
1950, yeah. I would hazard a guess we're just beginning of June, because they formed a decision was made to form a training company so that all drafts coming out to the battalion, and eventually it was going to be all battalions, would go into a training company. And I was fortunate, really, because there were three lance corporals, three corporals, sergeant, and a second lieutenant. And the three lance corporals, we were all friends. It was myself, John White, and Bill Everett, and I'd been promoted first, but they'd been promoted shortly after. And we were the three lance corporals. And then there were three corporals. So we had sections, the three sections were formed now, you know, excuse me, the LMG group and the section commanders, and platoon sergeant. And the platoon commander was Chris Lawrence, who got an MC in Korea. And he was a smashing boat, Sandhurst trained, but he was about, I guess he's 6 foot two, 6 feet three. He still is 6 foot two, 6 foot three. But he was a remarkable chap. But unfortunately, in England, he'd been misled, and he'd come out in a very dark green jungle green, and everybody else had olive green. So he used to stand out on parade like this great thing, this dark green pillar. And we had a smashing time with him in the training company. We used to get up in the morning, straight round the assault course, chasing all the guys around the assault course, the draft, you know. And I must admit, the NCOs, we used to bring up the rear, having chased them around, we all had to go through it, we used to bring up the rear, and instead of, there were ropes and things like that to leap over great chasms of water and things like that, and instead of trying to leap it, we used to leap, drop straight into the mud and the water and all that sort of thing, you know, and then go straight up and have a shower. We had a great time. Unfortunately, the company commander watched us one day and wasn't terribly pleased. Sent us all round again, and we had to do it properly. Climb over. We were going round the outside of the walls and leaping in the water and paddling across and all that. But we had a great time. But the training platoon was really first class. Chris Lawrence was a really first class platoon commander. And we had they brought in, we never changed, the three lance corporals never changed, but the corporals were changed at regular intervals because they were trying to get corporals in from other companies, you know, to train them, you know. Unfortunately, a lot of them fell by the wayside, and there were sergeants who left us as corporals and things like that. They're very, very strict. Oh, John Shipster was very strict, very strict. I mean, we'd had really field training. I mean, he would go along firing a rifle just in front of your nose, and then you had to leap up and throw a grenade, you know. And he wasn't too pleased with me, I remember. He was firing these rounds in front of my nose, and I don't know why, but I didn't actually throw the grenade very far. And it exploded just reasonably close to us. But a little bit later, we had 2-inch mortar firing, and I don't know why, but I've got a natural knack for getting the range of a 2-inch mortar, which is just a barrel, which you know, by hand, just about that long. And I could get the range straight away. So he was quite pleased with me then. He had to actually say, well, not too bad, because I was spot on the target. I think it's the old country instinct, you know, of being able to judge range. But we did very well. And we came up then to, I think we might have had, somewhere in between, whether the battalion went on leave, and then we did a range course down at Kai Tak, actually, where the airfield is. You know where they dug that big thing out to the sea? Well, it used to be a little mound at the beginning of the runway, and as the airplanes came in over this, the air used to lift them up and sort of lift them over the top. And the rangers were just beside the, just at the rear of the airfield there. Full of centipedes they were. I had one, some people got bit, I didn't get bitten, but you quite often find them in your blankets, frightening things they are. When one of the chaps got bitten, and he was in absolute agony. I mean, I'd had 3 weeks with jaundice as soon as I got out there. It must have kind of been just as I got out there. It must have been just after I'd been promoted, I think, because I was a lance, you know. But I went down to the Kowloon Hospital. I can't remember what the number of it was at that time. And the theatre had been turned into a ward. It was an enormous great ward, just beds. And all us yellow jaundice people there, you know. But the only treatment was board sweets. There was no, you know, they took blood now and again. They have trouble getting my blood even today, you know, so I never used to enjoy that. And I just managed, I keep asking them to let me go back up to the camp. I just managed to get back before me 21 days. I got back about 20, so I didn't lose my stripe. I carried on again, which was quite good. And we came then to, we just finished our platoon training at the end of August, at the beginning of August. And we were planning now to go on to company training. And I guess they'd have had skeleton, the other platoons would have been in a skeleton form, you know, and this four platoon would have gone on. And one weekend, a chap named Archie Smallman, who was a corporal, or a lance corporal maybe, came back from a weekend down in Kowloon and Hong Kong and said, we're off to Korea. The Korean War was starting now, but we're not terribly interested in it. You know, we're amusing ourselves with the American troops firing at each other and all that sort of business. You know, it's not our war, so we're not very interested. And he came back and he said, we're off to Korea. Said, oh, don't be silly. He said, I've talked to a naval officer, and there are ships in the harbour now waiting to load us up and take us off to Korea. Oh, rubbish. He said, you wait till tomorrow then. This is Monday. You wait till tomorrow, it'll have started by tomorrow. Of course, not tomorrow came. By Wednesday, Archie Smallman's hiding. You can't find him anywhere because he's feeling such a fool. But that Saturday, of course, was the Saturday when Andrew Mann got word that we were going. That's a strange scene because, see, we weren't supposed to go, actually. It was the Argylls and the Leicesters who were going. And suddenly, at the last minute, it was changed to the Middlesex. And I've often wondered that if that was because we were naughty on the 16th of May. It may have been, because I'm sure, though they would have tried to suppress it as much as possible, it would have got around that we'd had a naughty incident. But anyway,